Joe, we're back. How you doing?
Just fine, Tim. It's such a pleasure to hear your voice.
Great to talk to you tonight. We want to discuss Obamacare. It's passing, it's possible repeal, and it's possible replacement, and sort of the politics of healthcare and the medical industrial complex. So how do you want to get into this?
Well, let me just ask you, what is Obamacare, the affordable healthcare program that we now have? I'll tell you the truth. I have spent a lot of time trying to understand it, and I literally am further away now from understanding what the hell the thing is than when I started. So I'm just, can you help us by just clarifying what actually has occurred with the passage of the law that created Obamacare?
Well, there are two stages here. One is... Who wrote the law? And it was written by the insurance company, by the insurance industry itself. In fact, the author of it really was this lady named Liz Fowler, who was a vice president with WellPoint, an insurance outfit. And she worked with Max Baucus, Senator Max Baucus. He actually praised her in the well of the Senate, saying that she wrote the law and she was the point person for this, and she's dedicated to healthcare reform. She's a lobbyist, or vice president, really a lobbyist, and an agent for the insurance industry.
So can you tell us something about the individual, like either Max or this lady? What are they? Where do they come from? What's their background? I mean, are they patriots, or who are these people?
Well, he's just a typical Democratic senator. Nothing. He'll leave the Senate when he won't leave on his feet. He'll leave on his back. Probably, and Liz Fowler. Well, she's sort of this revolving door. If you look at her career, she's in and out of government, but is always representing the interests of the insurance industry, particularly the health insurance industry. And after she sort of wrote the law and helped it pass the Senate, she then became the White House director of its implementation. Now I think she's back. My notes here. She's back now at, let's see here. My notes here. Here we go. Darn it, where is that here? Liz Fowler, she's sort of a revolving door in the health insurance lobbying industry and government officials. She became the special assistant to the president for healthcare and economic policy at the National Economic Council after she wrote the law that became Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. She is now at Johnson & Johnson. It's government affairs, policy group. She's a lobbyist again.
What a shock.
Well, you know, what it does, it mandated, well, the first thing, it mandated that everyone get health insurance. And certain standards that Obamacare created, meaning that a lot of people had existing policies. I myself had an existing policy that high deductible, relatively affordable for my family, and my premiums tripled because the government determined my policy wasn't good enough. So I immediately said to myself, I don't spend $1,200 a month on healthcare. My family's healthy. I don't need doctors. No, thank you. So I opted out through a co-op thankfully there was a provisional law allowed for that, so I'm not forking over $1,200 a month for insurance for healthcare that I don't use. It mandated coverage that, which was originally a Republican plan back in the 90s to counter Hillary care. That fiasco back in the early 90s, I believe it was Newt Gingrich and the Heritage Foundation, which first floated the idea of mandated health insurance. everyone in a plan. So that's what's done. And of course, it's caused people's premiums to skyrocket. It's imposed taxes on other people's health plans that are considered gold plated. And it's a big, it's a big gift to the insurance industry. And it's not surprising that it was Liz Fowler who wrote much of the law, because she's a lobbyist and a vice president for an insurance company. But that was its passing. But then there was the litigation. Of course, when it passed the law, there was a question whether this thing was constitutional or not. Of course, it really isn't. But nevertheless, the Supreme Court found a way to find it constitutional. What it did was, throughout its debate on Capitol Hill, the Obama administration claimed that Obamacare, the fines or fees that it imposed was not a tax, and they justified the law under interstate commerce, or that old excuse they used to do everything, interstate commerce. But nevertheless, when we went to the Supreme Court, it ruled 5-4 that it was indeed constitutional. But Justice Roberts said it's a tax, so he changed the law. He rewrote the law. He penciled in it's not a fee or a fine, it's a tax, thus making it constitutional in the eyes of the Supreme Court. So that more legal sophistry to justify big government. Nothing new, I guess you could say. But that raises another question, because there is a clause in the Constitution that says that all spending bills must begin in the House. And Obamacare began in the Senate, so it's unconstitutional from that standpoint. I don't think that's yet to be litigated.
I'm getting just hot under the collar listening to you describe this thing.
And it's, they call it a tax, but the problem is that the Constitution, it's Article 1, Section 7, Clause 1. It's got the origination clause. It's all bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives, but the Senate may propose or concur with amendments as on other bills. So if it is indeed a tax, which somehow the Supreme Court magically made it a tax, even though the language of the law did not call it a tax, it is still unconstitutional because Obamacare originated in the Senate. And if it is a tax, it is a revenue bill, and it must originate in the House. So they have to, if they were to follow the Constitution, they should scrap the law, it's unconstitutional, and try again in the House. But then again,
Well, yeah, but just back up. I mean, I want to understand how they can shoehorn forcing someone to buy a product, somehow is a tax. I mean, it doesn't even meet the coherent definition of what a tax is.
No, it doesn't.
A tax is a extraction. Not a mandate to buy something. It's supposed to be money that goes to the government. So just the whole concept of the mandatory nature of it, to me, is just patently unconstitutional. And it goes along with all the other unconstitutional things that occur all the time. Like, for example, getting groped and radiated at the airports. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, the Constitution says no unreasonable search or seizure. And when they search 100% of the people, there's no definition of unreasonable that doesn't fit into. So, the fact that they were able to hoist this on the American people, it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone, because basically what we're looking at is just the dismantling of the Constitution one behavior set at a time.
Mm-hmm. It's all part of this sort of it's a fascist care, and it's all part of getting one into the matrix, because they're all monitored and controlled. It also, I think, included provisions of electronic medical records, which is a problem in itself, because then there's a problem of where these records are going to be stored in the cloud.
Right.
Yeah, that's great security. And it's all done in the name of efficiency, right? That's great. It's efficient. But of course, we have the politics of the repeal, where, of course, Donald Trump campaigned on getting rid of it. And of course, that was sort of an idea of the Republicans. And all of a sudden, now the Republicans can't seem to muster the votes to get rid of it without coming up with some sort of replacement, even though we were better off without it. So why bother with replacement if it's unconstitutional? Nor there is, or are there any arguments on Capitol Hill regarding the absurdity of the Supreme Court's decision that it is indeed unconstitutional, and the obvious, you know, the obvious situation where, you know, it's an unconstitutional law because, you know, since it was declared a tax, then the House has to. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I can read.
I've got a copy of the Constitution right here, and I don't see mandated health care anywhere. I mean, it's wouldn't that have to be a an amendment? You know, it's just such a bizarre.
Well, it's general, you know, what general welfare, interstate commerce, right. blah blah blah. You know,
yeah. You'd have to make it constitutional. You'd have to create an amendment. Man, I'd like to see that pass. Good luck with that. I mean, the population would just they would reject it in every single state. But, you know, I just wanted to point something out. You know, you had suggested we take on Obamacare some time ago, and we didn't know that this would be the week that the Republicans would face plant in terms of getting rid of it.
Yeah, McCain was the key vote on
that, right? McCain. Well, the whole lot of them are just as a collection, the cesspool. Yes. McCain is the largest floating thing in the cesspool, but the fact is that you know, and I've made this point many times, Tim, is that if you're an oligarch or a secret society of oligarchs and you want political power, you can't control one political party, and this is completely absurd. You have to control both. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely no reason in the world to try to go out and control one political party. It would be the stupidest thing that any oligarch has done since Caligula made his horse governor of Sicily. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just too stupid even to consider. So they don't do that. That's what they tell the public, right? They you know, you get this oligarch is a big Republican. This oligarch, you know, the Koch brothers. This oligarch is a left-winger, Soros. This is ridiculous. They are unified and they control both parties. So then when the Republicans, you know, say, oh, well, vote for us and we're going to repeal Obamacare, and then they lose because McCain won't deliver the vote, well, why be surprised? This is just an evidence piece to show you that your little political party, the Republicans, are in fact part of a larger system that is controlled by the oligarchs, by the society. That's what we're looking at.
Yeah. And healthcare itself, the way it's structured, is there to harvest you, drain you, make you sicker. You know, and again, it's you see the Republicans, now they're all debating about, you know, what's going to replace it and what about pre-existing conditions. But wait a second, we're talking about insurance, right? I mean, insurance, you can't get a pre-existing condition for your house after it burns down. You can't go and say, oh, my house burned down, I want to be covered now. You're mixing two different things. Now, if you want to have a program for welfare for people who are indigent, who need, okay, argue it on that basis. We'll go from there. But don't call it insurance. It's not insurance at that point.
I mean, it's ridiculous. And it's not. I mean, even there, you know, you have the semantical question about the word insurance. I mean, they use it, but basically it's just a ripoff. You know, they've you know, created the situation where they say we've expanded healthcare to 30 million people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, except who's picking up the tab? They didn't have a way to fund it, so they pushed all of this into the private sector, right?
Yeah, now the insurance companies are growing belly up. They can't pay for
it. Right.
Yeah.
Now all the insurance companies that are trying to make sense of that thing are going belly up. And now these 30 million people, I mean, how much better off are they, right? See, this is the where I'd really like to have someone who has access to real data get in here. Because the fact is, poor people in the United States use the emergency room,
mm-hmm.
right? If they use it at all. I'm going to just give an example of, you know, of how kind of absurd, the medical perspective. This is a joke, and it's slightly off color, but I think you'll understand the point of it. A healthcare worker came to a building, and he found all the people he'd been working with sharing the same needle. And he goes, "Gosh darn it, guys, I told you that you're going to get AIDS." And one of the heroin addicts looked up and he goes, "Well, what are you talking about? We're all wearing condoms."
Yeah.
So you see my point is that, so you have like, you know, basically you have the emergency room for poor people. And then beneath that, you have chaos because in many instances, you have opiate addiction. Mm-hmm. Now, there's just no way that you can shoehorn, you know, Blue Shield into the life of a heroin addict. It's just ridiculous, you know. And so the idea that now you've got them covered, this is just a mandate and some money's moving around. But inside the actual world where these people's health is in a state you can judge, there isn't any improvement to these people's health.
No, it's just more money. Yeah,
the idea that this is somehow going to help the health of the American people is just, I mean, Tim, it makes me discouraged that there are people so stupid to even consider that possibility. It's just not going to change anything. You're going to see in 10 years whatever is left of American healthcare. I'm sure there'll be some gigantic system in place, but it'll be just as crap as it was, 5 years ago. And all of the health statistics will also be crap. And that's just what we've got. This whole thing is, you know, and I don't want to waylay you, but I mean, basically, I just think that what this all ends up with is single payer. Now,
because
the system is going to collapse. I mean, if you look at Medicare and, you know, the trajectories of like cost of the thing, there's no way any of the trajectories of costs that we have established to our healthcare can be maintained.
Yeah, this goes back to that Clara Pliven plan that we talked about last week.
Yeah.
Overloading the system to justify.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, Tim, I hadn't thought, you're absolutely right. It's deliberately overloading the system to precipitate the collapse, and then they'll be there with single payer. Now, there's nothing wrong. Don't get me wrong. I mean, single payer, I feel the same way about single payer as I do about, you know, free enterprise or socialism. I mean, I think almost all of these expressions are, describing things which are not really important.
Yeah.
What's important is who controls the political and economic reality. That's what's important. If you have someone who really has the well-being of the population in mind, single payer probably would be just fine under that person's control. I'm sure you could make it work. So would free enterprise. Right. If the money production and the government laws and things are under control of people that really want the best for the public.
You're talking about a moral order. Yeah.
But the problem is we've got a secret society that wants basically world control and genocide. And so they can say whatever they want. They can call it, you know, Obamacare. They can call it single payer. They can call it, free enterprise. It's irrelevant. Those are just words. The problem is who's controlling the thing. And in our case, I was listening earlier today to the really excellent interview you did with April Bowden. I would hope everyone would attend that interview. That was excellent. And, I mean, April just comes across as an absolutely clear-minded and sincere individual who's really done a lot of research. And, you know, at one point she was talking about basically someone who was a whistleblower, a doctor and a researcher who'd been murdered. And she didn't really want to go into details. She just said, "Look, I have to tell everyone that the people that are controlling this thing are not Boy Scouts." Right. She was clearly making the case that the guy had been rubbed out, you know, because of his status as a whistleblower. And I would just say that her position is really what you need to know about Obamacare. See, that's all of the details and the money goes here and there and this insurance company's going out of business and the government picks. That's all, you know, okay, the system is insane and it's going to collapse. That's clear. But what April points out is there's malevolence. Mm-hmm. It's evil. And that's really what the sickness is. It isn't the money. It isn't the law or the technicalities. It's the damn evil that's controlling all this. And that's why it's going to end up really bad. And that's why, in my opinion, Tim, this is just a step toward a single payer, but under the control of a single malevolent, you know, oligarchic society.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's because it's all moving that direction. If you look, follow the trajectory, it started with Social Security in 1935.
Yeah.
Then in the 1960s, you get Medicare, Medicaid. I think in the 1990s, you have the Kennedy-Kassenbaum, which more or less doled out middle-class health care welfare to Americans. And this is all moving toward then, because you have, you know, Hillary Clinton's attempt in the 90s, which then spawned, like I said, spawned this notion of mandated coverage as a reaction to it. So it's a dialectic that's being played out here. And then all of a sudden you have this clamoring when Obama becomes president for the Affordable Care Act to address a crisis. None of them address the problems. So the crisis, like third-party reimbursement, the finances of it all, because there's no intention of addressing that. Again, they want to overload the system. They want to collectivize it and enslave everybody. That's the intention. Exactly. And people like these characters like Liz Fowler, they're just feeding at the trough. They're not, you know, in the inner circle. They're not 33rd degree Masons. They're right. Just cashing in the meantime. And
useful people, idiot, yeah. Who has the morality of a lizard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean that's what Liz Fowler is. She doesn't really understand what she's participating in. None of these people do. Even the idiots in Congress. You know, it's like the guy that is my congressperson. I mean, you know, sweetest guy imaginable, and he just doesn't have the intellectual breadth of a stone. Mm-hmm. He has no idea what's going on. He's just there to vote yes for war, you know. Just no clue about this stuff. And so this is our role. Our role is to alert the citizenry that what they're looking at is just a giant swirling cesspool of sophistry. None of this is real. I mean, to me, the Obamacare health system is basically like a Disney movie or something. Yeah. I mean, it has just absolutely no connection to reality at all. It's just there. The elements are there just to confuse people. I mean, who in the hell knows what is inside of the damn thing anyway? Even the insurance companies can't figure the thing out, right?
Don't you remember Nancy Pelosi? We have to pass it to find out what's in it.
But I mean, you know that they're going to make a lot of money on it because Fowler wrote it for them.
Well,
but you also know
that Nancy Pelosi statement is an opportunity for a great rejoinder, and that would be, well, what are you going to replace it with? We'll know about that when we repeal it. I mean, if we could pass a law without knowing what's in it, can't we repeal it without worrying about what's going to happen afterwards? I mean, it seems to be
right, exactly.
Logical progression.
We didn't read it to pass, so we don't need to read it to repeal it.
We repeal it.
We don't need to. We can't even read anyway. Most of these people can't. The Congress people are the ones that aren't inside the deal are just too stupid to read, I think, or have aides that are provided for them by the CIA. But I mean, they don't have a clue about what's going on in this thing, and they if they argue it, they argue about, well, all of these poor people, these 40 million people, right?
That, yeah, they didn't have insurance. Yeah.
And now they do. And so there's this moral, you know, elevation to our nation.
As if being on a list is going to translate into actual quality.
Exactly.
Medical
care. I mean, it's just completely insane. It's like, well, why didn't we just convert them all to saints and just say they're in heaven?
Yeah. That's what it's like.
I mean, because that's about as much reality. Or have we have a UFO to take them to planet Nirvana.
And it's worse than that, because a huge portion of that 40 million Americans are young people who have no need for health care, medical care.
Of course. Well,
they have no need for it. They're not sick.
I mean, look, for a healthy person, the last thing in the world you want is to introduce them to the medical system. I mean, the thing is just a complete... It's the third
cause of death in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, we have like a hospital nearby, and I don't want to name it. They'd probably sue me. But I mean, just every person I know that goes in there either dies or comes out with a staph infection that lasts the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. They're just dropping like flies. I mean, it is just a tip-to-stir cesspool. They have nothing to offer you. They've got chemicals that don't do anything except make you turn you into a seahorse, or they can give you radiation or chemotherapy for cancer, which just makes you sick and stupid, and then die.
Yeah, you go in there for treatment for diabetes. And you go down to the cafeteria in the basement, you know, in the bottom of the floor, and get a giant soda, you know.
They give you a gigantic, you know, Coca-Cola with a, you know, like artificial ice cream on top of it.
Yeah.
I was there the other day, and I was looking at the doctor. Even the doctors look like Pillsbury Doughboy. I mean, yeah. They all look like ready to go to diabetes 2 or 3, you know. I mean, they're just, it's a complete cesspool. It's just a joke, you know. It's just a complete joke. There isn't enough real medicine going on inside the healthcare to even bother with. I would really, you know, what I would really say to people, you know, this is my opinion on Obamacare. I would just tell people, look, organize among yourselves, provide your own healthcare.
Well, that's what they've done. I mean, there's some church-based things where you just pool together,
and
it's catastrophic. Exactly. It's like something comes up and you make an appeal.
Well, I mean, I'm not talking about being in the medical system. I'm just, forget all that. Just forget hospitals. I mean, Tim, this is where I'm at. I'm at risk of heart attack, right? Mm-hmm. My father, grandfather, great heart attack. So what am I going to do if I have a heart attack? Well, I have a little nutritional supplement that's designed to make you better if you have a heart attack.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go in. I mean, I'm telling you, I know this just sounds completely crazy, but I wouldn't go in because, I mean, I know the statistics on like bypass operations. That's just a total joke. The chemicals they give you, I think, are frankly would do more harm than good. They have no nutritional advice or anything at all. They don't even really, in fact, in my opinion, understand what a heart attack is. And so why would I go when I'm feeling bad with a heart attack to a building that is infested with a staph infection, which if you can't track, you have to take antibiotics for the rest of your life?
Yeah.
I mean, if I had a heart attack, the last place in the world I'd want to go would be one of these insane heart attacks. I mean, just crazy. If I break a bone or if I need stitches, I'll go to the they have like what's called a Medi Center.
Yeah.
Right. There's a doctor.
Urgent care.
Tell them what you want. They got $40 and then you're out the door. That's it. So what I'm saying is, Tim, Obamacare is sort of like the cherry on the ice cream sundae.
Mm-hmm.
It is just the last straw, in my opinion. It is now made, you know, you've got the health services are basically going to hurt you more often than help you. And to get them, you have to go through this labyrinth of complexity and spend a whole bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, they just don't have anything to offer. You know, just drop out of the system. I don't know how to legally, you know, to advise people here, you know, as far as, well, you know, what do you, because I know a lot of times they're mandated. But I would really like to see like a constitutional attempt by some small business groups to say, you know, we're going to drop out of Obamacare and we're going to tell our employees that in our opinion, the American medical system is a combination of malevolence and incompetence. And we want them to drop out. And instead, we're going to give them an hour every week to organize and see what they can do among themselves about trying to have better health.
Yeah, yeah. There is an article by Joaquin Hagopian about Big Pharma. And he says, what's wrong with America is what's wrong with Big Pharma, and what's wrong with Big Pharma is what's wrong with America. The circular reality is aimed to be thoroughly covered in this presentation. This is the story of how Big Pharma seeks enormous profits over the health and well-being of the humans it serves, and how big drug companies invasively corrupted the way the healthcare industry delivers its vital services. This is neither a new or a unique story. In fact, the story of Big Pharma is the exact same story of how big government, big oil, big agri, chemical giants like Monsanto have come to power. The controlling shareholders of all these major industries are one and the same. Big money belonging to a global central banking cabal own and operated all the Fortune 500 companies, in addition to virtually all national governments on Earth. The Rockefeller privatized healthcare in the United States back in the 1930s and has financed and largely influenced both healthcare and Big Pharma ever since. So we're getting into sort of the malevolence. You're talking about the malevolence of the system. We're talking about the medical industrial complex, which got its start, kind of developed out of the petroleum industry, the history of the Rockefellers, so they took it over back in the early 20th century with the Flexner Report under the guise of quality, raising quality and, you know, also raising a cadre of experts or technicians, these men in white coats. And they stifled all alternative care.
And there's no question in my mind that this has all been done as part of the Brave New World project, where what they want to end up with is just as Huxley described. They want a stratification where at the bottom, their people are too stupid to do anything other than menial jobs. In the middle, they can be sex slaves. They can't say no to anything. They're too docile. At the top, everybody is just in the free-for-all of, an orgy of exploitation on the lower caste. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what we're dealing with. And one of the ways they're trying to get there is through this medical stuff. I hate to say this because I know there are people out there who are listening. They have real medical issues, right? And they have a real relationship with some kind of medical provider in the United States. And they're saying, well, gee, Joe, if you were in my shoes, you know, you wouldn't want to stop the treatment or this or that. I can't really speak to specific instances. I can just speak to the general situation. And the general situation is get the hell out of the system right now. The people that are running the damn thing are going to try to turn – I mean, the real production, the real truth about what the medical system is wanting to do is an autistic child. That's the goal, you see. Mm-hmm. That's what they're doing. And that's the Brave New World. You know, you were discussing with April Bowden the idea that the military are finding roles, right, for the autistic.
Yeah.
Right, because they're so obedient. Right. Well, you'll see that's going to be a growth industry, Tim, as we go forward. You better believe that's going to be where you're going to see your increases in employment, because they are definitely organizing us neurologically into a caste system. And so you're going to see just more and more autism. I read this one doctor who was saying that by 2030, there'd be half the children would be have some degrees of autism. And this is going to plug right into docility, obedience, easy to condition. You know, in other words, that's really what, you know, is going on here. I sent you a link to a potential show topic of that we might discuss about how they just realized that sperm count in Japanese and Europeans is down 60%, right? And this is just in the last 50 years. If they go back further, it'd even be more. I had been using the number 50% because that was a number I thought I could defend. I looked at the recent studies, and it's just far worse than I thought. Mm-hmm. Far, far worse. So you're not going to be having many children, right? Look at the Georgia Guidestones with the number of people they want on the planet, 400 million. So you're gonna have a real reduction in children, and you're going to have a large fraction of them as autistic. And just remember one thing. Autism is simply a point on the IQ spectrum. Mm-hmm. And when you start seeing lots of autistic kids, you're also going to see a reduction in kids that are really brilliant. Right. They're going to be hand in hand. These are not distinct phenomena. It's all one bell curve system. And so they are definitely moving us to extinction, and in the meantime, they're making us more and more stupid. Anyway, Tim, I'm sorry to. I mean, I didn't mean to get quite so depressing, but that's my honest feeling, and I just think Obamacare is, you know, the confusion, the incapacity to stop it. No one understands it. The insurance companies seem to be benefiting. The healthcare is not getting better. It's just a complete cesspool. It would make no sense as an actual political action.
Yeah.
But it only makes sense if you plug it into, you know, the Brave New World idea.
Well, I mean, the malevolence is clearly there. If you look at it, it's just a question of who it's directed at. We do know that vaccine programs have been used to sterilize people. The World Health Organization program did this in Mexico and in Kenya, where they use that the hormone that causes women to miscarry. Yeah. They included it in tetanus shots, and there were cocks. They were giving these women 6-7 shots. They found if you add this hormone, you give them a series of shots, you can cause them to no longer be able to conceive or maintain a pregnancy. Causes a spontaneous abortion. Now, they got caught. One of the reasons how they got caught was they were only going after women aged, girls 14 to women 49. They weren't targeting males, so supposedly for tetanus. And also, they're giving a series of shots, like 6 or 7, as opposed to, you know, 1 or 2 with tetanus. And you also have the history of the, you know, the Rockefeller Foundation going into Puerto Rico and sterilizing 40% of Puerto Rican women. In the 19, was it the 30s or 40s they did this?
Yeah.
And no one went to jail for this stuff. I mean, if I was going around tainting people's food with stuff that caused them to become sterile or cause whatever medical issues, I think I might have some legal problems. But these people just skate on by and with no problem. This also shows you that the secret society is behind this because there's no legal ramifications.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a great point. If this was just either stupidity, you know, or just a group that was breaking law, then you'd have some kind of consequence. There'd be a legal process. That whole episode was just swept under the table.
Yeah. You know, and so, I mean, it's a question of, yeah, they're doing it to some degree. It's a question of whether they're doing it. And so it's not, your, I mean, so there's a history here. There's a context what they have to be aware of. When you talk about, you know, using vaccines to sterilize or somehow alter the population, to taint, to poison the population, that's a great way to do it. It's advocated, you know. Through, you know, who was it? It was Bertrand Russell who said it through injunctions and injections or something.
Yeah.
Diet injunctions and injections that transform humanity. So this is how they think. And of course, that's a great pretext because the whole ideology or idolatry of vaccines, because if you look at the history of vaccines, just a cursory examination of history shows that vaccines did not get rid of disease. In fact, it spread disease. It caused outbreaks. The smallpox vaccine caused smallpox outbreaks. The people that spread measles are the people who are inoculated, who are now shedding,
infecting everyone else.
Yeah. And the whole health revolution in the 20th century wasn't medical intervention. It was hygiene, public sanitation, diet, increasing standards of living, these things. You don't have to go into a third world country and inject them with poisonous vaccines, you know, with mercury and aluminum tainted vaccines. Clean the water, give them good food, nutrition, and their health, you know, their health improves. Is that amazing? You need a doctor to figure that out?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot cheaper, too, but no, they're dedicated to this vaccination program. The polio vaccine, they didn't get rid of polio, they redefined it. Paralysis is up. Multiple sclerosis has increased like 400 times since the 1980s. So there's paralysis out there. What's causing the paralysis? They're just not calling it polio anymore. You know, and polio itself was probably a epiphenomenal to things like antibiotics,
DDT.
DDT.
DDT was just everywhere, and then you started having this. They had a name for it. It was like a sudden facial paralysis. There was some little technical term, you know, and then Jonas Salk comes along with his crap vaccine, and the stuff starts to go down because there so many people got sick with DDT. They banned it.
Mm-hmm.
But the this condition stayed baseline to what it was before the DDT was injected into everybody's body. And then it really never got better. So the vaccine was just a complete waste of time. And yet they you know, trumpet it like, well, this was just, you know, saving mankind or something, when no one can look at the statistics and the, you know, the evidence showing that DDT and the other toxins were starting to, you know, have some effect, and think that there wasn't some correlation between that stuff and everyone getting sick. You know, it's like, if you look at the doctor who talked about the 60% reduction in sperm, mm-hmm. in European, and he goes, well, he goes, this is probably related to the chemicals that are needed for industry.
Toxins. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah. But
being,
I mean,
we're being poisoned, and they give us shots.
He, like he says, it is just sophistry. Like, well, yeah. Really, we need this crap for industry. How come we can't have industry without poisoning ourselves? I mean, it's just ridiculous. This we need the people, the public, to realize that the government is not stupid. They can see that when a toxin is in the environment and everyone's getting sick, that there's a relationship. The fact that they let this stuff go on, the fact that they mandate vaccines, it just shows there's absolute evil.
Well, it's California, right? California mandate.
Not stupidity. This is evil. Mm-hmm. You know, they know exactly. When in my state, Tim, you cannot be in the public school system now unless you go through the vaccine program.
Which is ridiculous, because if you're vaccinated, you should be okay.
Yeah, everyone else be vaccinated. You just, but you know, and I mean, the number is just incredible. In the '60s.
Well, you know? I think Mississippi has the highest participation rate in vaccines, and they have the sickest children.
Of course. But getting back to Obamacare, what do you think Obamacare is going to do with the vaccine? I mean, to me, what I see is like the oligarchs are simply, at the end of the day, when the dust settles, Obamacare is just going to create a lot more power to mandate for the government. That's really what we're dealing with here. It may look like it's stupidity. It's not. They know what they're doing. We're heading toward where they have more capacity to mandate. And what they're going to mandate is vaccines and, you know, other medicines that make you stupid, that damage your DNA, that reduce your sperm count. That's really what I think this is all about.
Well, how they do this, because somewhere along the line, they caught the imagination or the trust of the American people, and they did that through massive propaganda for the Rockefeller Foundation, when they took over medical care, because they used their time, you know, the publishing empire, to promote the meme of miracle drugs, these things. The idea of men in white coats coming to save us. You had using the regulatory process through the Food and Drug Administration to harass and shut down any competitors, any alternative treatments. That's done. And also, 98% of all funding for all medical journals is from pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
So you think
getting back to the interview that you did with April, that was fantastic. The way you were able to get her to outline, you know, where the money's coming from and how they actually set up the training of doctors. And one thing I thought was a very interesting idea was that the reason they force the doctors to work 100 hours a week as interns is basically to break them intellectually. So that they basically don't have a kind of a mind that's able to contest and question data. Mm-hmm. When they get through with the program, they're just mind control robots that will simply dispense pills and chemicals as they're told to do.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And it's an interesting point that they're snake oil salesmen. And of course, Rockefeller's father was an actual snake oil salesman, and his son, you know, John D. Senior picked up the baton and continued with that. Was it Nujol or something? Oil they sold helped. I think it cured cancer and cured constipation or something. It was just oil. people drinking oil.
It's hilarious. I know that because then the Rockefeller Foundation takes over American medicine. And then if you look, you know, just two generations back, you have literal snake oil salesmen, you know, in charge of the Rockefeller family. I mean, it doesn't really kind of bode well for the citizenry, right, to have this group in control of our medical system. And the Rockefellers and their allied oligarchs literally took over the system.
Yeah, I mean that's, it was really systematic. I think they started the American the Association of State and Local Governments, or so they got state legislation passed. And so pretty much the American Medical Association's cartel was enthroned as establishment medicine, so they could stifle any competition. And it's a type of, you know, it's like anything, medicine, you know, it's you need some sort, you know, sometimes you need a combination of both. You need, you know, integrated care, but they're not trained in nutrition. I believe there was one case where there was a nutritionist who was healing people, and they got the American Medical Association. Here we go. Says this was this guy, his name was Beale. He was an editor who wrote a book about the drug cartel back in the 30s or 40s. But there was a case where this guy was a, you know, alternative care, who's actually healing his patients. He was a doctor, and he wrote Beale. He wrote, "Financed by taxpayers, these drug trust persecutions leave no stone unturned to destroy the victim. If he is a small operator, the resulting attorney's fees and court costs put him out of business. In one case, Dr. Adolphus Hohensee of Scranton, Pennsylvania, who had stated that vitamins, he used natural ones, were vital to good health," radical, huh, "was taken to court for misbranding his product. The American Medical Association furnished 10 medicos who reversed all known medical theories by testifying that vitamins are not necessary for the human body. Confronted with governmental bulletins to the contrary, the medicos wiggled out of that one by declaring that these standards publications were outdated. Vitamins are not necessary to the human body."
Right. The nutrients in plants and animals that we eat were part of what evolution was using, right, over the million years. I mean, it's completely insane.
That goes like the notion of the immune system being completely vulnerable. So we need to be injected with 30 vaccinations over the course of a few years. Babies should be given hepatitis B shots.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You know, I mean, it's squalene, and just, I mean, all I can say is, if you have a child or are about to have one, please do the research into the dangers of vaccines. I mean, there's a lot of good information now. And, you know, people just need to be aware of it. And try to organize to be able to create support groups. You know, I think that, you know, this is a great time to drop out of the California public school system.
Just drop out. What if people?
The only reason you send your child there is, one, it's free, and the other thing is because you can socialize. Try to do your best to organize homeschooling groups, you know.
Yeah, what if
this is a great time to drop out?
It's like that. What if someone declared war and no one showed up, right?
Exactly. Same thing. Well, a citizen has to do it. I mean, you could. Yeah. You just know that they're going to have their mind control puppets on, you know, TV, hammering away at the values of the vaccines and how without Obamacare there'd be 40 million people that would have no health services.
Yeah.
I mean,
they'd be dying. They'd be dying.
They could get sick.
Dropping like flies.
Right, if without Obamacare. And so, you know, so it's just these are difficult times, and these are times that the citizen has to be just, you know, better than the government.
Well, I think what it takes is, I mean, people have so much trust. I mean, think of all the propaganda over the years, Marcus Welby, ER, heroic doctors, white coats, these things. So it's just, they're the experts. We don't know enough to question. We just submit to their treatment because they're the experts. Acknowledging that all these agencies and institutions that we look for, whether it's educational, security,
are
like the military,
like WHO, World Health Organization. Yeah. I mean, FDA. And they're just all just, they're just extension of oligarchic malevolence.
Because they've all been infiltrated by their henchmen.
Of course, yeah, every single one of them. I mean, if it's getting a lot of publicity, it's an agency that's, you know, spouting medical wisdom. You know that the oligarchs own it and control it. They control the media. They've got the puppet reporter asking the insane questions of a doctor that's selling, you know, snake oil. And the public just sits there in rapt attention, nodding their head and rolls up their sleeve for the next vaccination.
You look at the CDC with a guy, Bill Thompson.
Who
he admitted, and that pretty much vindicates Wakefield.
Who
just said that there may be a link. And he lost his license to practice because he said there may be a link. And he took time out. This is an example of a conscientious medical doctor, professionally trained. And there are doctors out there like Susan Humphreys, Andrew Wakefield, these guys. These people who they're professionally trained, but they've broken out of the system, so they become these gadflies, these rebels. But they're good because they have the expertise, which you do need. I'm not rejecting the idea of expertise, but they've been able to expose the corruption of the system. But he took the time. Remember, he had these autistic kids who were banging their heads against the floor, ruining the lives of their families because it can really ruin the life. It's something more stressful than that. And he found out that these kids weren't suffering neurological damage. They were in pain. And he did a culture in their gut and found that I think it was the measles virus in their gut. And it got in there and it causes a perforation of the intestine, which gets in the
blood. They had an active measles infection in their intestine.
And they were in pain.
And it was causing ulceration
of
their lining of their skin. And they had no way to express it. Because other aspects of the vaccination had taken away some of their speech capacity.
Yeah.
What are you going to do except bang your head on? I mean that you're going to see that the banging of the head on the floor is going to be 100% of the Obamacare patients in about 10 years.
And that's sort of what they want.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone banging their head against in frustration, banging their head against the not being able to express anything.
But, you talked about, there's a need for expertise. Man, I mean, I hate to say it. I'm just beyond that. I just think that I don't give a damn what these people say. I don't trust any of them.
They've lost my confidence. The moment they said hepatitis B shot, I'm like, what the heck?
I had an argument with a doctor a couple months ago, and I was yelling at him. I got angry, and I just said, we were talking about radiation and the value of it in terms of chemotherapy. And I just told him, I just said, just get the hell out. Don't get me started. I'm gonna radiate you, because he didn't know anything. He was parroting the statistics that had been given him. He had no studies, absolutely nothing to support it. He's supposed to be an expert, right? But the problem is, Tim, is the experts do know what they're doing. The problem is what they're doing is evil.
Yeah.
You see? That's why you don't want to be around medical expertise at this point. It is just too sick. It is too evil. It's too much malevolence. A layperson can never cut through all this. Someone who has studied it well and has a good grasp on the malevolence would be someone like April Bowden.
Yeah.
But beyond that, in terms of what are the statistics of the smallpox vaccines and what are the actual molecular, things that are going on? I'm sorry. I don't even want to hear it from these people. I don't want to hear it. And I don't want them to be near my body.
But they're injecting mercury into your muscle tissue.
Exactly. Our chemotherapy, our radiation, are there surgery ideas for cancer? Just to hell with them.
Didn't chemotherapy derive from those, like a mustard gas explosion or World
War II? Yeah, it is mustard gas. For all of the first variations of it was simply mustard gas. I mean, the research they did was called trench warfare. I'm not kidding. This is how it started. They mustard gas all these people, and they noticed that some of them had their tumors went down, and they go, "Well, this is great. We can use this." It was never a cure for anything. It was mustard gas. And the tumors died, but the cancer doesn't go away. It has nothing to do with the causality of the cancer.
Because cancer is a symptom.
It's a symptom, right? Yeah. Of course, that there's something wrong with the immune system. And so this was where it comes from. If you look at the deaths per 100,000 of cancer for like the last 100 years, basically it's exactly the same as where we started. It went up when there was a lot of people smoking, and then went down when smoking fell out of vogue. But beyond that, all of this stuff, all of the chemos and the radiations and the surgery, it's actually, a lot of cancers are just getting worse because they have nothing to do with a lack of chemicals in your body. It's just the opposite. They have everything to do with the fact that there are chemicals in your body.
Yeah, you're
and so you can't get a fix.
Yeah, it's oxidative stress. The mitochondria is not functioning properly for some reason or another. Yeah. And obviously, you want to cleanse that so it gets top energy, starts functioning properly. But the problem is all the standard treatments, which cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, and is the reason why it's so expensive.
Yeah,
that's why it continues. It's so expensive. The treatments, they give you cancer, they destroy your immune system. I heard this a talk today, a guy talking about how 5% of cancer patients die from malnutrition. Because they can't eat anything anymore from the treatment. So how do you fight off a disease when you're starving yourself to death?
You know, it's interesting. I had a very good friend of mine. He didn't have a family. And last year, he came down with lymphoma. And I couldn't talk him out of it. He tried chemo and radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really quite tragic is that, I mean, he's passed away. The treatment didn't work, of course. But what was really sad is that he basically had what was called chemo brain. Now, it's a term that's in existence. You can Google it. It'll come up. But they don't tell you about this. The oncologist doesn't mention this when you come in, you know, with your problem. Chemo brain basically is a vastly reduced neurology. He would come into the kitchen, not know why he'd come in. He would lose the ability to finish sentences, you know. His brain was shot, and the quality of his life was shot. And this was from the second he got done with the chemo and radiation till when he passed away. You know, he had no cancer, supposedly, for about 6 or 7 months, and then it came back, and they said, well, we can give you more chemo and radiation, but we don't think it'll stop it. And these things make you so sick.
Mm-hmm.
That he just said, no, I don't want to do it, and he went into hospice. But the fact is, if he had done nothing, he wouldn't have died any quicker, I don't think, but he would have had his natural life preserved. His mind would have been active. And instead, he was half dead from the second he left the oncology procedure.
Mm-hmm. And sure, he ran up quite a bill, too.
$500,000.
Yeah, and so there you go. And that's the problem with the medical system itself. I heard a guy talking about how, you know, it's all financialized.
Yeah.
And all these facilities you see, you walk into, they have to be paid for. And there's investors, those bonds need to be paid out on. And so they need return customers. And it's, you know, it's the same way that, you know, Microsoft or Apple designs products that you need, features that you must buy from them, and you have to return updates, things like that. And there's even a planned obsolescence involved in all these products that we use. Well, you know, the same thing applies to us. You know,
exactly. They need us,
yeah, they need us sick.
Because they don't cure cancer; they just treat it. And
it's a profit center.
And this going back to Obamacare, the idea of like with some kind of triumph for human, aspirations that there'd be 40 million people now that are more of them that are now under the control or have access to the health system. Hey, it's the other way around. That means there's 40 million people that don't have the opportunity to get out of the damn system,
mm-hmm.
right? Which now so many of these people don't need to be in the system, but that's why it would have been a great time for them to really look into other ways of getting medical treatment if they need it. Because this is really, damn it, Tim, this is what we got to do. We really honestly need, as families, as individuals, as communities, if there's any left, is to sit down and say, what the hell are we going to do? Really, what are we going to do? We cannot trust the damn hospital system. You cannot trust the AMA. You certainly can't trust the drug companies.
What if you weren't being forced to fork over, you know, 10 grand a year in health insurance and devote it towards maybe higher quality food?
Exactly. It's like you brought up like the statistic that if we would just invert the money spent on sodas and vegetables, that like, you know, 90% of the health products, health problems would go away, particularly if they were healthy vegetables.
Yeah, yeah. Or garden, you know, local gardens, these sort of things. Yeah. And another thing, addressing that to the extent that our food supply has not only been tainted, but has been robbed of many of its nutrients. So
yes,
people are walking around malnourished. That, you know, they're fatter than ever, but they're malnourished, and it's a function.
You know, I got if you come and visit me ever, which I hope you do as a vacation, and this would be a great family vacation. Come and see us out here in Santa Barbara. I'll take you to our beach club, and you can see all these pictures from like when it was first started in the 20s and 30s. There's hundreds of them. They got pictures all over the place. And you look at these people, there's not an obese person in there, right? Mm-hmm. And the picture's right there. And then right next to it is a window out to the current crop of humanity occupying the club. I mean, it looks like a fat farm, you know? I mean, every man has a pot belly. I mean, it is, the kids are fat. Everyone looks weak. And these are upper middle class people. Right.
Well, they're eating hot pockets. It's been
Yeah. And the food is just all chemical. You know, so what do you do? I mean, Obamacare, I would just hope that people not spend a lot of time studying it or trying to, you know, change it and just accept the fact that you have to leave it. Mm-hmm. And try to organize among yourselves ways to get real health care, which is starts with proper nutrition and a proper understanding of the toxins in the environment, you know.
Well, the fact that you have a newborn baby and you're told you need wellness visits and they need to be poked and prodded and stuck with needles and
vaccines and chemicals. Yeah. And this is the problem with the baby, is not enough chemicals in the body, not enough mercury, not enough squalene, not enough insect DNA. That's always something that I knew I was missing when I was growing up. You know, I go, wow, if only I had more insect DNA to put into my body so that I would have a strong reaction. Yeah, you'd have a strong reaction and get insect DNA in your body. So,
well, it's tough. You know, I mean, all my kids, each one was vaccinated less and less and less until finally our sixth child, born at home, we had a midwife. And he's never been stuck with a needle once in his life. And he's
congratulations.
He'll be 3 in December, and he's healthy, happy, and
may you have an influence on your community that just spreads out to everyone who has a clear mind. Mm-hmm. That this is what has to happen. We have to do our own research. We have to try to share research. I mean, you know, you and I are doing our humble best tonight to give people a heads up that you're in a murder machine, not a Moloch machine, which it is, but it's also a murder machine. And you have to try to protect yourself and your family. And, you know, it starts out basically by trying to get rid of any interest in the chemicals that they want to put in your body. Mm-hmm. Just got to, and this is where the line is. Say, I'm sorry, but nothing. Not a single vaccine, not a single drug. I'm not going to do any of them. To hell with you. I will simply try to use the natural nutrition, the natural vitamins, the natural sunlight. This is where health is, mm-hmm. right? And they'll say, oh, well, the kid has a specialty problem. Many of them do. You know, MS at an early age, diabetes. Mm-hmm. I would first, for all of those things, Tim, I try to find a way in the natural system to see if you can, you know, create some healing.
No, because a lot of it's an inflammatory reaction to toxins or, you know, damage. And you release the inflammation, you reduce inflammation, you alleviate the symptom and you get better. It's again, I believe I mentioned earlier, third most cause of death, frequent cause of death in the United States today is medical error. That's what's admitted. So that's what I mean. They don't talk about the pharmaceuticals, things people don't complain about, people that die they're not aware of, they blame it on something else, you know, these things. So, you know, it's, I mean, that's a quarter million people a year. That's 2.5 million people a decade. And that's what they admit to.
And then when you think about all of the people who go into hospitals and get infections, I mean, I would really wonder about the statistics for that, because I just know, I mean, maybe I have, my friends have had bad luck, but I'm telling you, there was one fatality. There was one person who has antibiotics the rest of his life. There was one woman who got very, very sick, and she was prenatal and basically almost lost the kid. You know, and that's a pretty small group. I don't know that many people that have gone into this place. So I think it's much worse than even let on. I don't know. I mean, it sure is something that I would be very wary of.
That's what led my wife to decide she wanted a child, birth, because of the MRSA thing. She contracted a mild case of it. Last time she went to the hospital, she hated it. Not to mention the fact, from what I understand, is the way, even the birthing method that they use increases the trauma and the pain tenfold. She had it at home, and the way they did it, she said it was discomforting, a lot of pressure, but the pain wasn't there. And just, you know, and she said the whole experience was quicker, just wasn't as traumatic. And also, by the way, $12,000 in hospital, have a baby at home, it's under $3,000.
Yeah, and you know something, having a birth with, you know, a woman and maybe, you know, a couple people who know what they're doing assisting her, I would have to say that's kind of like the natural way that, that we are designed to have children.
Yeah, because it's not really a medical event.
Yeah, evolution didn't have like an obstetrician that wanted to induce labor because his golf schedule was starting at the tee time was at 3:00.
Yeah,
you know, so I mean, it's just ridiculous. They just don't see. This is what I'm saying. They have nothing to offer. They just don't. At this point, the system is so collapsed, in my opinion. It is so much just this cesspool of malevolence and incompetence and just craziness that they really have nothing to offer. Yeah, I am sure they'll have an occasional miracle cure or reaction to one of the chemicals. Of course, right? Mm-hmm. So what? You know, I mean, anyone can look at America today and see that the health of the population is worse.
It was Eustace Mullins who said they give you a miracle drug. They call it a miracle drug because it's a miracle you live after they give it to you.
Yeah, well, they give it to 100 people and one person has a good result and they trot that person out saying, well, here yeah, it worked great for me. Look, so
there's a thing here I wanted to I came across this was written by Dr. Robert Higgs. He's an economist. He's advocating a single payer food insurance. And isn't it high time the USA adopted single payer food system? And he goes, isn't it high time that the USA adopted a single-payer system of food insurance? After all, nothing is more important than food. No one can survive more than a few days without eating. Leaving the provision of food to the whims and caprices of the free market is simply a recipe for malnutrition and starvation. And obviously the poor and the minorities have very little access to food under the horse and buggy market arrangements. Under the proposed system, the government would establish a national feeding system to which everyone would be required to belong and make premium payments. Everyone engaging in producing and distributing food would be drafted into the system. Whenever anyone got hungry, he would present himself to a licensed provider who would be authorized to provide stipulated types of food, the cost of which would be billed to the NFS at the prices the agency had established. Only foods the NFS had found to be necessary for the individual eater would be provided and their cost reimbursed. The system would permit great reductions in administrative cost, unnecessary duplication, example given, 75 different kinds of breakfast cereal, 27 different kinds of yogurt, etc., would be eliminated. The poor at long last would all get adequate food. The rich would get the same food, thereby ensuring equity and equal dignity at the dinner table. Farm organizations would no longer be required because all farmers would be organized into vast collective farms where government managers would ensure that only the best methods, seeds, fertilizers, and so forth were used according to the strict government requirements based on settled science. Would not this arrangement be a huge improvement over the anarchy of the present means of food supply and distribution? What could possibly go wrong? Robert Higgs.
That's very funny. Yeah. And, obviously he makes a good point about the insanity of single payer under malevolence, mm-hmm. right? I mean, believe me, it's sort of like how I feel about people arguing, free markets versus socialism, or inciting Adam Smith versus Karl Marx. I mean,
well, that's a dialectic, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's just these are just Freemasons with sophistry, and there hasn't been a free market in hundreds of years. No one would even know what it looks like if one of them came down the street. I mean, we've been controlled by central banks for so long that we don't even recognize the fact that there is no free market anywhere. Because when one group can create credit and charge whatever they want to their tribe and another price to us, there's no, I mean, everything else is irrelevant.
And you don't have to give specific orders to programs. If you look around you, you just have to direct credit and resources to a particular program or agenda, and it'll go that way. If you want to destroy notions of beauty or malevolent oligarchy, you want to destroy classical art, you just promote modern art with all the money you control.
Yeah. My point is that it doesn't really matter, which side of that dialectic you're on, because it's a fake contest. Mm-hmm. It's like Trump or Hillary, pick your poison, basically. So, single payer, free market, no such thing. Our problem is something else. One of the big problems is that we believe in this fantasy matrix economic hologram that we think we understand, what's going on, when the fact is this is all just central bank planning, mm-hmm. and that we're being victims by. So we've got to fix our culture and our world.
Well, this is the point I'm trying to make. This is the insight I've recent years is that we're not dealing with stupidity or coincidence. We're dealing with conspiracy and malevolence.
Yeah,
and that's a big difference.
That's the first step.
Yeah,
Tim. That it took me a long time. It was very hard for me to understand this, but I get it now, and that is the problem. And so it's at the root of all of our problems. Obamacare is a great example. We could sit here and argue, how do we get the insurance companies to buy in or not leave Ohio? I mean, all of this stuff is just completely insane. I mean, nothing matters in this and that dimension.
It's like arguing the minimum wage.
Exactly. I mean, it's like literally we have these hologram issues, gay marriage as should it be in Obamacare or not, I mean.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can't take Obamacare and treat it separately than from Agenda 21 or from, not Goals 2000, what's the other education thing? Common Core. Common Core, if you look at Common Core.
Yeah, it's all part of the same thing.
It's all the same thing.
Yeah. Obamacare is just part of the mind control.
I mean,
to tell people that, you're getting more health care. Of course, we're charging more money and everything we give you is poison, but don't worry about that. You're going to be feeling great here once you eat the chemical, candy that you buy at 7-Eleven.
Yeah, the right to keep your doctor. So the same man in a white coat that's been killing you for the last 20 years.
Yeah, I'm fighting for my right to keep my doctor who was giving me chemotherapy and vaccinations. Mm-hmm. I'm dying to have him. Yeah, so it's... we've got Obamacare is important. People need to pay attention. I mean, I think obviously it's going to move. It's a political situation where they're going to try to create more power, more concentration, more mandatory medicine. That's where I think ready. Like I said, the goal of Obamacare is an increase in autistic children. They want to get that number up to like 50% or something, and then they'll have an ideal workforce and army.
And then they normalize it because they call it, what do they call it? Neurological diversity or something? Or
well, they have they've got TV shows now that are heroizing.
Yeah, the movie The Accountant was
an
autistic gentleman who was a virtual superhero because of his autism.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, yeah. You know, like, and so it's, you know, and it's racist to be, in opposition to these individuals, as though the promotion and belief in, you know, health and strength is wrong.
That's when you take an individual who's been engineered to be dysfunctional, whether psychologically, emotionally, or physically, and all of a sudden, because of the ideology of victimization, we can't look at the wider, the larger environment or systems that created this individual, this unfortunate individual. We have to respect who he is, which is
exactly.
His identity is his dysfunction. Yeah. And that therein... We can't criticize the system for producing these people. It's like whether broken families producing,
be like making the transvestite or the autistic individual feel bad.
Yeah,
it's sensitive.
You have to feel good about yourself. Yeah.
See, this is so you can see how they've set it up to, they can push these agendas just harder and harder because people are intimidated because they put the individual as a victim in front of you and they say, you cannot attack this victim when you complain about the chemical system that produced it,
mm-hmm.
Right?
The toxic culture, the toxic environment, and we're swimming swimming in it. And that's all of a sudden you focus on the individual victim. That's the focal point. He's the focal point, but not the toxic culture or toxic environment that's being produced by industry. By government, by corporations, which is all controlled by a malevolent secret society.
Exactly.
So,
there it is, Tim. Obamacare.
Yep. So, okay, I'll let you go then. Where are we? Yeah, we're hour 16 minutes. So.
All right, Tim. Okay. Well, thank you so much. That was the best discussion about Obamacare I've ever had.
Okay, good. Well, we'll talk next week.
All right, yeah, we'll talk next week. We'll get them then.
Have a good week. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.